Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
Welcome to Dare to Dream. I'm Debbie. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And today, my guest is Dr. Tom Pinkson, psychologist, ceremonial leader, and apprentice of Huichol shamans, here to share indigenous wisdom, sacred teachings of peyote, and the transformational power of vision quests to awaken your soul and reconnect you with the spirit of earth. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Podcast, Welt Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and its high ranking on Apple Podcasts. If you like video, you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Rumble, and if you prefer audio, well, we are on every major podcast platform, including BBS Radio. The show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here in Access Consciousness. They do energy work out in the world, and you can become a facilitator or you can take one of their classes. Go to Dr. Dane here, HEER.com. How about unlocking your cosmic potential with a phenomenal free starseed video and report for an engaging exploration that investigates many starseed species in depth? Learn your galactic origins, discover your star lineage, and celestial ancestry now. Get your free gift. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed. That's D-E-B-B-I. dashinger.com/starseed. Also, I was interviewed for a second time on Gaia TV. Please check out my interview with George Norrie on Beyond Belief, talking a lot about the subject that Tom and I are going to talk about today, which is shamanism, shaman and shamans all over the world from the beginning of time. And if you don't yet have Gaia TV, allow me to give you a gift of a free 1-week subscription. You can go to debbiedashinger.com/Gaia. That's G-A-I-A. And finally, I am doing and offering monthly shamanic healings and rituals. I've been very moved by how many people are signing up for these around the world. And thus far, they have been free. They won't remain free forever. But right now, for me to reach as many people as possible with this work is really what the point is all about. So go ahead and sign up either for the Starseed gift or just go to debbiedashinger.com/gift and sign up on my website, because then you'll be getting notifications when these offerings roll out so you can join. Well, my guest today is Tom Pinkson, a PhD transpersonal psychologist. For over 60 years, Tom has been committed to reconnecting people with the wisdom principles of nature and their own true nature, infinite, unconditional light and love. He completed an 11-year apprenticeship with Huichol shamans and has been doing vision quests for over 50 years. He's been a pioneer in bridging the space between ancient and indigenous wisdom traditions to address the challenges of the times. He helped start the first at-home hospice program in the United States and worked with children with life-threatening illnesses for over 30 years, created a successful wilderness treatment modality, wow, this is amazing, for heroin addicts, and is the founder of A New Vision of Living Foundation, the spiritual community of Wakan, is an author of numerous books, leads fire ceremonies, and co-hosts the Shamanic Sundays podcast with his older daughter. And I also want to point out his book that I just read, The Psychedelic Shaman, The Wisdom Warrior's Path to Transformation. If you would like to get your copy, you can do so on Amazon and all major book outlets. If you'd like to learn more about Tom, go to New Vision of Living dot org. And with that, I welcome Tom to the Dare to Dream show. It is so good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, and blessings to all the listeners.
Excellent. Well, I wanted to start where we started a few minutes ago. You said, I just finished a fire ceremony. I mean, what a beautiful bio, by the way. How much service you've been, how many pockets you've found to assist various places in humanity. So thank you for your good work. And tell us about the fire ceremonies that you're doing and offering.
One of the assignments when I finished my 11-year apprenticeship from my spiritual grandmother, Guadalupe, who's now in the spirit world, she said that the people in the north have forgotten that the fire is alive, that it's conscious, that it's an intelligence, it's a transmitter of wisdom, guidance from the universe, if we open ourselves with humility and attention, and can give us the kind of guidance we need to create responses to the challenges of today from a source of wisdom that comes from the universe rather than our egos or our rational minds. So she said, I have a responsibility to go back up north and give people opportunity to come sit with the Huichols call the spirit of the fire, which they believe is the first shaman, the first Makame, the first shaman. Tatawadi, grandfather fire spirit, to bring people into a situation where you're able to sit with some introductory rituals to what I call intimatize the relationship with the spirit of the fire, connect, consciously attune, and enter into a period of communion with the spirit of the fire, having fed the fire initially with some basura, garbage, that doesn't serve your life. So an opportunity to give to the fire judgments, guilt, shame, thought forms of limitation, of negativity, anything that clogs your pipes, give it to the fire in a ritual ceremony, which opens the doorway to the purification, letting go, for entering into a period of then silence after some medicine songs to help with that attunement process. Let's just sit in the silence. For last night, we did it for about 45 minutes outside around this beautiful fireplace under a beautiful sky with the stars and the trees, and let's just listen and see what we get. Let's listen with the full dimension of our interdimensional being. Let's listen with the fullness of all of that, see what we get from that listening, and then go around the circle. And since we're all different openings to the mystery, we all have a different sensitivity, and none's better than anybody else, and nobody's more important than anybody else, but the opportunity to sit in the silence with this elder, to see what wisdom guidance it might give us in some level of our being, and then to share, go around the circle and share what came through. And so that's what we did. And it was about 25 people, and it was just some people I knew, some people had been in previous fire ceremonies, some people came for the first time, some people came with friends of friends, and the richness of what's shared as we go around the circle, from the very simple thing of let's just sit in a respectful, humble, receptive way with this elder, pay attention to what happens, what's the truth of what we experience, and then to share that, the richness of that and the profoundness of it is very touching. Good medicine. That's what we did last night.
Yeah, that sounds pretty beautiful, I have to say. And I love this idea of feeding the fire, hucha, you know, your dark, heavy, dense energy and what no longer serves you, that you're able to give it up and that it loves to mulch what doesn't serve us or the planet. And you mentioned the Huichol people. So what, Tom, initially drew you to the Huichol? How did you even come across who they were and the opportunity to work with them and do an 11-year apprenticeship? How did they accept you and know that you would be somebody who would really stick with it?
Well, the answer to that goes back to, I guess it would be 1966, when after a year of preparation, I was an undergraduate student at San Francisco State. And so I came up from L.A., junior college in L.A. in 65, right into the burgeoning renaissance of the hippie movement that was fueled by psychedelics. And so I was coming from a political activist, cynical, bitter, constricted, angry, self-righteous place, ego-identified, because that's all I knew. And I was interested in the unconscious. And so LSD's all around, I'm hearing all these experiences. And so after a year of preparation, I went ahead and had an experience in a safe setting with people I trusted or knew what they were doing. And three transformational visions came through, one of which was seeing a vision on the ceiling of the third story walk up in the Haight-Ashbury, where I lived at the time, of a panorama of an ancient Mesoamerican life. And I was seeing it in the symbols, the symbolic visualness of when you look at the paintings of Mesoamerican life. I was seeing it all alive and breathing. And so I was seeing babies being born and mothers nursing the children and the children growing up and playing and becoming adolescents and adults and working in the fields and finding a partner and a mating and babies being born and people growing old and dying and just the cycles of it over and over again. It's beautiful. And the feeling was, you're seeing something you've experienced here. And there'll be a time when you come back to this. And it's not for you to go seek it out. Go on with your life. We'll let you know. So I took all of that in, transformed by the beauty of it and the gratitude of it. And 15 years later, I heard about, through a friend, the opportunity to join a small group of gringos connecting with the Huichol pilgrimage 300 miles to where the peyote grows and to gather in a ceremonial way with the guidance of the shaman and these weeks before preparation in the village. And as you travel, every place you stop, you're doing ceremonies and then finally arriving at the Holy Land, Huiricuta, where the peyote medicine grows and then ingesting it in a ceremonial way. And I knew about the Huichols because the opening from the LSD in 1966, then I began to read the literature and pursue whatever openings came into my awareness of learning about other cultures and how they work with sacred plants from Mother Earth. And so I knew about the Huichols. And when I heard from this friend of mine, he knew someone who had married into the tribe, gone through their own initiations, and was living in one of the ranchos in the mountains of the Sierra Mazateca. And the Huichol people, I might mention, lived so far up in the mountains that when the Spanish conquistadores came in and killed the people for their practicing their religion, they were high enough in the mountains, and it was more so difficult terrain. They pretty much survived all of that, and so were able to continue the generational wisdom passed on through the decades, through the millennia, whatever, following the right relationships from spirit about how to live in harmony and balance with the land and with all of creation, that everything's alive and conscious. And so when I heard this news of the opportunity that this man who'd married into the Huichol tribe was going to take a very small group of gringos on the pilgrimage led by the shaman, it was what I experienced 15 years earlier, kind of erupted from the underground and said, this is it. This is it. This is what you need to go on. And so I did, and I had no idea what I was getting in for. This was, I think, 1981. I'd been doing vision quests for a number of years and had been working with indigenous people throughout the United States, but I hadn't been to Mexico to work with any of the people down there. So it was a new experience. I didn't know fully what I was getting into. And a couple of years into it, at Huiricuta, after an all-night ceremony with the peyote, the shaman asked, is there anyone willing to commit to completion? Which means 5 years of going on the pilgrimage And during those time of the year, there's certain prescriptions about your behavior, what you have to do, what you have to not do, and if you mess up, you have to start over. And so it's very demanding. And so we asked, is there anybody willing to commit to the completion? And not even knowing what it entailed, something came up inside of me and said, everybody else was, I think there were one or two other gringos that responded with an affirmative. The rest didn't. And it came up strong in me to say, yes, I'm going to make this commitment, even knowing, not knowing what I'm fully committing to, really. And that's how the doorway opened. And so the people saw, the shaman saw when I continued. I was the only one of those three who said they would work to complete. And when they saw, especially Guadalupe, who I became very close with over the years, that I was there not just to take, but to give, and was there in a respectful and humble way, and I was there to serve and help in whatever ways I could, and to learn and to honor what I was given, and fulfill the assignments the shaman gave me for the time when I was back here living with my family in the States, and then I'd come back the next year and for the next pilgrimage. So that went on for 5 years, and after that they said, well, you need to do another one. Huichols do do five, but you're not Huichol, and it's not about you trying to become Huichol. It's to help you become who you're here to be, and so you need to do another one. I said okay, and so then I went ahead and did that, which culminated in a very powerful initiation experience in the Rancho when I returned, and. And then I continued on afterwards, after I'd completed that I guess you could say got my degree, graduated from the program, because it was so powerful for me, I wanted to keep going. And there were other people who wanted to join me, that small groups of people I took down to work with the Huichol shamans. And I continued that for 5 more years, and then Guadalupe died, crossed over. And that was kind of, there wasn't somebody that I respected and was connected with that stepped into, the expression is pick up her bundle and carry it on. Mm. So that's why it was 11 years.
11 years. Regarding your 11-year apprenticeship with their shamans, what was the most outstanding experience for you with the Huichol shamans that you can share?
Well, there was not just one. There was many, so let me just take a moment and see which one wants to come out right now. Okay, yeah. By the way, I want to thank you for having me on here and the good work you do, and the opportunity is for me to meet you and hear about your work, and as an elder to be able to support you in the work you're doing, because that's one of the responsibilities of an elder that I learned about with the Huichols and with other indigenous people around the world I've studied with.
Thank you.
Whatever you've been given in your life, been blessed to give, don't take it to the grave with you, but make sure you find ways of passing it on to the next generation, because that's the way it works. Okay, so on the hunt for the, what's called the hunt for the sacred peyote cactus,
okay,
that grows in the desert of Wirikuta, that the shaman leads. So everybody's out looking in the desert. And the peyote grows, it's not a cactus that grows upward, but stays flat on the desert floor. And the color blends in perfectly with the colors of the rocks and the sand and what's there in the desert there. So it's you can be standing right on peyote and have it all around you and not see it if you're not attuned. So we're out hunting. I think this was maybe the second or third pilgrimage. Everybody scatters out, and this is the whole extended family of Huichols in the Rancho goes on this pilgrimage. So you have the elders, your aunts and uncles, and you have the couples, and you have the teenagers, and you have the children, and you have the nursing babies, and everybody. And so everybody fans out into the desert under the guidance of the shaman to search for the medicine, gather it all up in a ceremonial way, bring it back to sit and circle around Tantawadi, the fire spirit, clean that medicine, and then after a blessing from the shaman, then you start eating it. You don't eat any of it until the shaman blesses it all and then feeds it to you. So as we're out hunting for the medicine, I suddenly see one, a big, it's called grandfather, that has something in the middle that I've never seen before. A beautiful pink-white flower in the middle. And I was so struck by the beauty of it and the surprise of it. And I just felt, this is so beautiful, I want to take it home with me. That was my initial response to it, spontaneous response. And then, of course, I realized, well, number one, you can't take that back through the border because you'll get arrested. It's against the law. And the insanity of our Eurocentric culture about how threatening eating sacred plants are that open consciousness to see the hypocrisy and the toxicity of many of our societal ways. It's very threatening, and so it's outlawed. You go to jail. So you can't bring it back that way. Plus, even if you could, by the time you get home, the flower would have already blossomed and died away and released, and so it wouldn't be there anymore. And okay, so what options do I have here, if any? And so I listened to the guide and said, well, I could eat it. I could just eat it. So I didn't know if that was respectful or not in the tradition. So I went and asked one of the elders if it was okay for me to do that or not. And all the elders are always saying, eat, go ahead and eat. Go ahead, eat more. The more you eat, the more you'll learn. So I went back and said my prayers of gratitude. And after the shaman had blessed the medicine, then I went ahead and ate that peyote with the flower in it. And then several hours later, now after we've all finished gathering, we're all sitting around the fire and entering into an all-night ceremony that the shaman leads, where you're ingesting medicine the whole night, you're sitting in silence, you're dancing, you're praying, they're singing. It's just beautiful under the star-studded sky in the wilderness desert, high desert, 6,000 feet elevation. It's gorgeous. So in this state, it's called empeyotado, under the influence. All of a sudden, I see with my eyes closed on the inner plane, I see a vision of myself and my heart. And I see this beautiful pink-white flower that I saw in the peyote. I see it. It's in my heart. I see it just vibrating there. Such beauty. And as I watch it, I'm surprised and I'm watching it. It suddenly divides in two. Oh, interesting. And those divide in two. And those divide in two, and it just keeps going till my whole heart is filled up with these beautiful pink-white flowers, which I realize is the energy of love. These are the flower, the Huichol word for flowers is tutus. So these are the tutus, the flowers of Werikuta, blossoming in my heart, giving me an energetic felt sense and visual image of what infinite unconditional love is. So it takes me into a bliss state. I'm just in bliss experiencing all of this. But that reproduction continues. They keep dividing until my heart's filled up. So then what? Then it goes outside of my chest and it starts flowing through my body, reproducing until my whole body being is filled with this blissful, beautiful tutus of Werikuta, just vibrating love, infinite, unconditional light and love. Body's filled up, but they're still reproducing, but there's no more room in my body. So now what? So I hear the guidance from Spirit. It says, now you have the opportunity to open your heart and be a channel for this healing light and love that I've filled you with and sending it out into the world, sending it out to your family, sending it out to your ancestors, sending it out to wherever your heart guides you to send it to. Be a channel for this healing light and love, because that's what you're here to do.
That is a gorgeous story. Wow. And I'm not an artist by any means, but if I was, I would create a picture of that. I would paint that for you. That image of the flowers reproducing, and all about the heart. It almost feels like when I listen to this, the flowers were honored that you took them in to you. And then they gave you back this medicine of we're here for love, but now that you've received the love, now it's your job to also send the love out. It's very profound.
Let me offer you an invitation. And of course, you're free to do with it whatever you want. But a moment ago, you said you're not an artist.
No.
So I think everybody's an artist. So I'm going to invite you to take that thought form of limitation and throw it in the fire, because that kind of energy transmutes it into more healing light and love and sends it back to us. Mm. And give yourself permission to do exactly what, and here I'm suggesting it as if it's so, you listen in your integrity and see what it brings up for you. Let go of the label, you're not an artist, and gift both of us by making a drawing of what you see with the flowers, of those love flowers blossoming in the heart. Okay. And send it to me.
I love that. Oh, and that is such a great idea. I will do exactly that at my next fire ceremony, and I will be doing several coming up. That's so great. Any kind of limiting thought for anyone who's listening, that you think I'm this, I'm not that. Yeah, that's very good mulch for the fire. Very good. And so peyote is one of the medicines I've never done, but I've done many. Is it correct that that's a heart opener?
Well, I think out of respect for the mystery, the sacred mystery that we live in and it lives in us, I think it's important about making general statements about anything. Because in the mystery, 10 people can take peyote or ayahuasca or mushrooms or whatever and have a heart opening experience, and one person can have an experience that's very difficult and challenging, holds great potential for healing if they know how to work with it skillfully, but it's not heart opening. Instead, it's taking them into the impact of the wounds and the undigested energetic material that's stuck in the pipes from those wounds that clogs them up with fear, guilt, shame, thought forms of negativity, and into experiencing that, because we don't have power to change what we don't face the truth of and look into the truth of it, accept it. So to be able to say peyote is a heart-opening experience, as with any medicine, it certainly has that potential to do that. And I think ultimately all the medicines, the psychoactive, some sacred plant medicines, Mother Earth gives those to us to help us wake up, to help us to see how we've fallen asleep and into the illusion that we're separate egos and that we are our bodies and our ego stories. The plants are, and from that place, based on that perception of separation, which is an illusion, comes fear and anxiety and ultimately violence toward the perceived others that are threatening, all coming from that illusion of perception of separation. So the medicines are coming from, this is my understanding of it, coming from Mother Earth to help us wake up to, no, you're not a separate thing. You're not you're more than your physical body. You're more than your ego. You're more than your ego's stories. You're way more than that. And that way more is connected to everything else, because there's no such thing as separation. And so when the plants help us open to, when they do, to the truth of our sacred unity, then life becomes an opportunity to work the challenges that can close our hearts down and constrict us into that ego identity, to wake up, remember that there's more to us than that, and get on with honoring what I call honoring, and walk what the rituals call walking the heart path to completion in your life with our purpose in being here. So the plants are coming forward when we come to them in a respectful way and create a respectful relationship with the spirits of the plants to help us to wake up. And that wake up process might take us into what feels like hell realms of fear and anxiety and terror, of dynamics of energy going on inside of us that we haven't faced, that are in our shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So to say it automatically, there's no such thing, it's automatically going to open your heart.
Absolutely.
What's automatically going to happen is if you surrender to it, you're going to have an experience. But recognize you're opening a doorway to deeper consciousness, deeper levels of unconsciousness, higher consciousness, and you don't know what's going to come through. You're not in charge of that. So it takes courage to enter into it, and it's because you don't know what's going to come through, and it can be scary, that it's important to do the work with people who know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, Huachuma is the same way. It is a heart opener, but I mean, when I first started doing Huachuma, it was not opening my heart. There was a lot of stuff coming out of me, and it may have been the masculine trauma in my lineage, but it was not enjoyable. But after quite some time of doing it, it then was. Yeah. And same thing with ayahuasca, I have to say, because a lot of people have asked me about that who have never done it, and they want to know. And it's like, I can only say if you are called, I mean, I do think it's important to be called to it, but if you're called to it, you're doing the right thing. You're answering something that your soul is interacting with. And then you do have to surrender, because it's going to be whatever the experience is meant to be for you. And I mean, I've done ayahuasca 25 times and it's never been the same, never been the same. It's always been a completely different journey. And so much has to do with the medicine and the facilitator or shaman or where I'm at. And there's a lot of factors that come into the healing work with medicine. So I do really understand what you're talking about. And thank you for that.
Yeah.
How did your relationship with Guadalupe de la Cruz, the renowned huichol that you've been telling us about, how did Guadalupe shape your journey and your responsibilities as a bridge between these cultures, gringo and the huichol?
I think the most important teacher in our lives, like Buddha and many others, said is our direct experience. And to be able to be with a medicine person and watch not just what they do in ceremony, but watch how they live their lives, how they do they honor those values that are part of the ceremony. Do they live in integrity or not? So I always watch, not open and listen to what a person says, but I also watch what they do. I also watch how they live. And so there were other shamans that I worked with, one who was very powerful, the initial shaman, very powerful, but she wasn't coming from the heart. So I learned from her, I learned and saw her power and learned from her. But when I met Guadalupe a couple of years into the pilgrimage, then I experienced this person is coming from her heart, all heart medicine. And I saw her love for the children. She wasn't able to have children herself. I saw that she would look into my heart and other people's heart and see where they were at. And when she saw the person was sincere, she was always there helping. Sometimes she could be sharp and busting somebody on doing something that wasn't in right relationship, but always from the heart, everything from the heart. And I saw that she lived the values of respectful relationship. Again, not just in ceremony, but in just the ordinary activities of the day. And so gradually my appreciation for her grew as I watched her and experienced what she brought through and ceremony, and I would just, and I felt so thankful to be in relationship with her that I just made myself available for whatever I can do to support you, whatever I can do to help you on whatever level, driving her to doctor's appointments or buying food or to supply her and the people in the rancho, whatever it is I could do. And so she saw and experienced my willingness to give, in a way, out of my love for her and appreciation for what the incredible gift she was sharing with me. She would open up and share more, and I'd learn more. And so and that relationship, even though she crossed in the spirit world many years ago, the relationship still continues. I call her presence into, I'll be doing a medicine journey this weekend, call her presence in. Fire ceremony last night, call her spirit in, and Some people can feel and get an experience of her coming through. So relationships continue, and I'm very thankful for my spiritual grandmother, Guadalupe.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. Can you describe a pivotal moment or lesson from your apprenticeship that profoundly shaped your understanding of healing or spirituality?
Well, certainly the experience I share, the vision with the flowers of the heart, is all about a healing. What stands in the way of, we don't have to ask for love, because the essence of our being is love. We are love, and our love is for giving. That's what all the years of visionary and vision quest experience teach me as the true reality. We are love. So if we're not experiencing that love that's inside of us, then and we're suffering, because if our hearts are closed because of the wounds of our lives or thought forms of negativity or limitation or guilt or shame or judgment, if our hearts are closed and we're identified just with our ego and its stories, then it's a constriction on who and what we really are, and we're suffering, or in one way or another. So the visionary work provides opportunity for us to be able to go see what's the causes of my suffering, to go down to the roots of the causes of my suffering. Because we don't have power to change what we don't see, as I mentioned before. But when I do see the suffering I create for myself through that limited identification with my ego and its stories that constrict my heart, shut me down, like, well, I'm not an artist, like you said before, not true. Maybe I was kicked out of chorus class in eighth grade because my voice wasn't good enough to be in the chorus. So therefore, I'm not a singer. And the truth is, I've not been blessed with a great voice or a great ear to hear whether I'm in tune or not. But what I've been blessed with is I love to sing. I love to sing, gives me joy to sing. So I had to overcome, the medicine helped me overcome the constriction I put on myself. I'm not a singer. To where I shut down on something that gives me joy to do for many years, shame and shut down and constricted. So the medicine helped me see that, it helped me unplug from that belief and give myself permission, free myself up to, you're never going to be a singer that other people like to listen to for entertainment. But I'm going to give you the spirit, Tatawari spirits, and I'm going to give you songs to sing, medicine songs. They're not about entertainment. They're about inner attainment, medicine songs. And you're going to have to give to the fire your self-consciousness, belief that you can't sing, and your worry, your ego's worry and concern, how will other people respond? What will they think? You're going to give it all to the fire and follow through on these assignments that we give you, because you offer yourself up to serve Tatawati, to serve the spirit. And you asked, so the assignments that we get from the medicine are not going to be in our ego's comfort zone. Mm. So I had to face that constriction inside of me and give it to the fire and let those songs come through. And so one of my favorite things to do in ceremonies and in my life and relationship is to sing songs, medicine songs. So I'm going to sing one to you right now.
All right.
For your listeners. And this song comes from Tatawati. Let's take a moment here and just to envision that we're sitting in front of a sacred fire, seeing its beauty, the flickering flames, and hearing in the silence the song it sings, and feeling the warmth of the fire. And in full awareness, attuned awareness, that what we're looking at and what we're seeing, what we're feeling and hearing is a transmission of intelligence, not just from Father Sun that sent starlight to the earth, captured in the trees, released in the fire that we're seeing right now, but goes back to the the solar explosion from where Father's sun came from and jump back another step to the solar explosion where that star came from until we go all the way back to the beginning of this universe, what some scientists refer as the Big Bang. There, in fact, is a direct transmission from the beginning creation of the universe of the creative wisdom power of the universe being transmitted to us from the flow of photons from the sacred fire, the energy coming to us from the fire and speaking to us. And one of my times of listening with Tathawade, this song came through that I was told, sing this song to people. Sing this song to people that tells the people listening to it, sitting with the fire, what I, Tathawade, am doing. And so here's that song. I'm sending you light to help you remember. I'm sending you light to hold you in love. I'm sending you light to help you remember. I'm sending you light to guide your way home. Love is the answer. Love is the key. Love is the healer. Let love flow through thee. Let love flow, Yahweh. So therein is the healing that's available to us through respectful, humble, right relationship with spirit.
Aho. Bravo. Thank you for that. I'm marinating in that song and the lyrics too. Nature. I love that you're all about nature. I think nature holds a lot of the answer, and I think the relationship with nature holds the answer. Talk about what nature means to you and sacred geography, such as the mountains and the rivers and the animals, the plants. What is that like for you, and what wisdom do you gain there?
Having been born in New York City in 1945 and living the first 5 years of my life there, I didn't get to experience much of nature. It wasn't until summertime when my mother took me and my baby sister out for a couple of weeks in the country. And for the, and took, one time she took me out into the garden, and she pulled out a carrot from the earth. And she washed it off, and then she put it in her mouth and she ate it. I'm 3 years old. This is blowing my mind, because my understanding, food comes from the refrigerator or it comes from the cupboard. And here's my mother, who I love and trust. She's going out in the earth and she's picking something out of the earth and cleaning it up. And then she's putting it in her mouth and chewing it. And then she said, here, Tommy, have some of this. So I trust her. I put some in my mouth and an explosion of energy from a fresh carrot. And so that was an initial opening to the power of nature and the opening of my heart with appreciation for this magnificent creation that opens itself up and gives us more creation. And we chose have understanding of the invisible power that you look at a branch of a bush or a tree during the winter and all you see is wood. But springtime comes, which we're in now, and all of a sudden one day in spring you come out and you see there's a little bump on that branch or that piece of wood there. That wasn't there yesterday. And then you come out the next day and that bump's a little bigger, and you keep watching it over days, and all of a sudden this flower comes out, this blossom comes out in fantastic shape or form or whatever, colors and smell and beauty. And so where's that coming from? I had a big flower come out of a cactus a couple of days ago, literally this big. And you look at that cactus and it's all spines, and you said, how did that beautiful flower come out of that? What kind of magic? Well, there's an invisible growth power that comes up from Mother Earth. And the Huichols call that the goddess Tecutsi Nakawe, Great Grandmother Growth. Great Grandmother Growth, Tecutsi Nakawe. So she comes up from her depths in the subterranean womb where she does the work of winter, where she's taken what's fallen away in the fall that's died. She takes it down in her womb and in a way we can't see, because during the winter it's dark and it's rainy and it's cloudy. But down in her womb there, she's doing major work. So when springtime comes, she sends up that growth power energy into nature, which we're a part of. So she sends it up not just into the trees and the bushes and the plant, sends it up into us to grow the seeds of our potential, to give us growth power energy for those seeds to grow, that if we nurture them, have the potential to reach their highest levels of realization. So every spring, I am just absolutely mind blown by seeing this experience of great-grandmother Gross' artistry and creativity, what she manifests. And ever since I was a child, with that initial experience to nature, whenever I could, when we moved out of the city eventually, my deepest connection to inner peace during a troubled childhood and troubled adolescence was to go be out in nature, go out into the woods. When we moved to California, when I was exposed to the mountains, to the Sierra Nevada, the power of the mountains, the power of the ocean at the beach, the power of the deep forest, the power of the desert, like with the Huichols hunting the peyote medicine. And without fail, if I'm down or I'm depressed or I'm uptight or I'm constricted or I'm stuck in a negative ego loop or something, then I just need to go out and walk on the Madre. I just need to go out and be with Mother Earth. Wherever I am, whatever the situation allows me to be as closely connected to Mother Earth. And when I go on vision quests, there's been a number of times when I've gone on vision quest when backpacking into the location we were going, I'd feel sick or literally be sick, with a fever or whatever. And I just knew, just get me to the vision quest site. Just get me to base camp. And once I can lie down on Mother Earth, she will suck out of me whatever needs to be sucked out, and she will send that growth power energy to heal me. And every single time I've gone in that state, that's exactly what's happened. Mm-hmm. So my love affair with, if you will, Mother Nature, and Tecutsi Nakwe, great-grandmother Growth, and the gifts of what she manifests, which is the same powers that are in you and I, for us to grow the seeds inside of us of our potential, getting rid of the thought forms that say, oh, I can't do that, or whatever, but just opening to the flow of that energy, because we're living in a universe of infinite possibility. Let us not be the ones who limit Great Spirit and say, oh, no, that can't happen through me. I'm not an artist. Right? So,
can we talk about Vision Quest? I just want to say, because of how you preempted this and described your relationship with nature, it's something that I found also in reading your book, is this incredible openness you had to experiences. You didn't shy away from things. And then you would have grand experiences and then keep going after them, whether it was with medicine, whether it was with the vision quests you've been doing for so long, or various experiences, working with the Huichol, etc. It's very interesting to me. And so I have now, this is my second program that I'm in where they're requesting a vision quest. And I will just say, like, as a woman alone, I don't feel comfortable going into the mountain. And I've camped a lot in my life. I love camping. That's fine. But I've actually never done that alone. And so as a woman going to the mountains alone, I'm not concerned about the animals at all. In fact, if I saw an animal, I would take that as a sign of medicine, their medicine for me, but I'm concerned about humanity, men in particular. So, what, you know, how do you assuage that, and can you address vision quests?
Well, I've been blessed with two daughters who started going out on vision quests when they were young teenagers, and concerns I have when the people that I've taken on vision quests go out for their solo time,
right,
are of course increased immeasurably when it's my own daughters going out for solo time. But that concern is with everybody that goes out. So one of the responsibilities of that is part of my initiation with the Vision Quest experience is you need to have a good relationship with the helping protective spirits so you can call them in and create a circle of protection for those people on their vision quest. And part of your responsibility is when they're out there is you keep that line of protection going, feeding that line of protection the whole time that people are out there. So for me to get to that place, I had to face the worst fears of what could happen to people on Vision Quest. My first Vision Quest teacher said, don't go out on a Vision Quest unless you're prepared to die, not metaphorically or not emotionally or psychologically or spiritually. So do not go out on a Vision Quest unless you're prepared to die. And do not go out on a Vision Quest, and also don't take sacred plant medicine unless you're willing to take on more responsibility. Because if you do those things, you will get assignments. And if you open yourself, you will get assignments. And if you don't honor those assignments, then you're causing trouble for yourself. Better to not take them on and not do them. So if you go with that understanding. So for me, in my own initial work, being guided to take people out on vision quests, and supported in that initiation process by elders that I work with, that it pushed my buttons of, so given your concerns, facing the truths of what could happen, yes, your young daughters, other young women or women of whatever age, there could be some deranged man that comes by, and because of the poison toxicity of their conditioning in our culture, does violence and rapes you or kills you or whatever. That's possible. That is always possible wherever we go. But then when you're out in a place of isolation, it's who knows, anything can happen. So my experience in life and working with medicine is face the fears. Don't deny that that's not possible or can happen. Face it and accept the truth that is possible. Do your prayers and work with your spirit helpers to create that protection. But it's also possible it still happens. So be humble, do your part, and then surrender. And this is where it's the internal work. It's surrender into what do you have faith and trust in that's bigger than yourself from your own life experience, if anything? What do you have? As you face those fears of what could happen, what do you have faith and trust in that's bigger than you and your ego that you can call on for help in providing that protection? So it would work my faith and trust muscles to be in those situations. And after 50 years and people go out, now I'm going out into the desert. So there's mountain lions that come through, there's rattlesnakes, there's scorpions. Once in a while, a bear comes through, pretty rare, but once in a while. So there's all kinds of things can happen. People can trip on something and hit a rock and be unconscious. So just because I've been doing this, and next March I'll be taking a small group out in the desert again for Vision Quest. Great Spirit given me life until that time as an 80-year-old person. And even though I've been doing it all these years, still there's anxiety that comes up about what could happen. So I get an opportunity to work on facing the truth of that, and I surrender to you, Great Spirit, with faith and trust, with protection for that person, so they can have the experiences you brought them out here to have safely and bring them back safely to base camp when the period of time of fasting and solitude in nature is over. So I get an opportunity to work those faith and trust muscles every time I go out. And muscles don't get stronger if we don't work them.
That's right. Absolutely. And so tell us, why do a vision quest? Why should people join you in March of next year? Why would anybody want to do a vision quest?
Excellent question. Let's excuse me. Let's take that word should and put that in the fire. So let go of all all shoulds and just come back to the question of and reflecting on, I'm not here by accident in this life. The creative powers of the universe, whatever you want to call them, gave me life and are giving life to me in this moment. and what I call the angels of protection had brought me this far in my life. And none of that is by accident, that there's purpose in my being here. The creator powers give me this life and protected me and brought me to this point. Wherever we are in the stage of the life cycle, I have a purpose in being here. I have a deeper being than my ego identification, my soul, that's come into this incarnation to go through certain experiences to help wake up on a deeper level, remember the truth of who we are, love what we are, why we're here, to be a channel for that healing light and love. Wake up from the sleep state of identification with ego and feeding ego's needs instead of our soul. Because if we don't feed our souls, then on a soul level we start to starve. And the experience of that is depression or fear, or constriction and anxiety and stuck in negativity and suffering. So the understanding with indigenous people that you're not here by accident, as you come into usually for the woman when she first comes into her moon time, and for the young boy when the testosterone, the power of that comes on, then the elders understood that this is a time for initiation. These are big powers the woman's coming into to be able to bring life. Great powers the man's coming into to be able to take life and use it, if guided not by ego, how to protect life for that life that the woman brings through, and then the protection to the conditions so that life can get what it needs to reach its fullest blossoming and greatest good. If we don't have initiations about how to work with that power of the woman and the man, that power can go in destructive, toxic ways, which we see every day in reporting in the news of what's happening. Right? So when it was time for you to open up as a young person to your purpose, what spirit had in mind in giving you life, what purpose spirit had in mind, then you don't go to ask somebody else about what that purpose is. You go back into quote-unquote nature to be in an I-thou relationship with the creative powers of nature, which are coming from the great spirit, and you step out of your comfort zone, you leave the comforts of home, whatever those are, and you're deliberately going to deny yourself that which we love to do, to eat, for our lives, and we need to do, you're going to deliberately deny yourself that for a period of time to demonstrate to the spirit your sincerity and your commitment to wanting to open up to getting that guidance, that vision, that insight, that understanding from spirit about why you're here. And so you'll be tested when you're out there in your solo time fasting. You'll be tested by your fears. All your fears, your greatest fears are going to come up. Whatever's been stuck in your, pushed down in your shadow, in your unconscious, it's going to come up, either in the dreams or situations that happen. So you're going to have to face into your darkness and see what's in there. And that's the opportunity to create conscious, skillful relationship with what's in there, to open the doorways to the gifts that are in there also, that can only be realized when we face into and do that shadow work. And so if you as a young person want to know your purpose in being here, so it's not about you should do this, it's if you want to know why spirit breathed life into you and what gifts it's given you, spirit's given you, that's your responsibility to learn about and develop to their highest degree. Why? Not for ego or gain, but to give back in service to your people, to give back in service to Mother Earth, to give back in service to the sacred fire, to the animals, to the plants, to life. That's why you're here, to give back, to help feed life in a positive way. Then it's time for you to go on a vision quest. Then it's time for you to go back to source, to get from source why it gave you life and the and the medicine gifts it's given you as a sacred being, be you in a woman's body or a man's body or whatever mixed body, you know, whatever your soul's incarnated into, you have particular gifts that you've been given, sensitivities, medicine gifts that it's your responsibility to learn about and find the practices to help you cultivate those, the potential of those seeds to the fullest realization. So if that's something that calls you, if your soul calls you, then it's time to go out on a vision quest. So I felt that call from an early age, very strongly, that was initiated originally from death. When I was 2 months before my fourth birthday, my father died. And so the bedtime stories I'd been told, and they all lived happily ever after, that was trashed. And I was plunged into the reality in this life that there's this power called death that can come and take people you love and whenever it wants to and does not need your permission. Mm. That's part of this life that you're in. And so I was initiated at an age I couldn't understand it at the time into the teachings of impermanence. Right? Took me 15 years till opening with the medicine, with the LSD, to go back into and unpack that experience. And beside the trauma of it and the impact of that trauma on this young child, which was me, see the medicine teachings in it, recognize and understand the medicine teachings in it. And so that was the start of whatever. Number one, I'm seeing through the untruths about life. I'm seeing into what's true about how life really works, which includes death. And so, given this experience of impermanence of everything that I see, including myself, the question that started for me at that 3.5-year-old, although I didn't know it cognitively at the time, was, but led to the search that led to the vision quest and the medicine work, was what, given this reality of death, what, if anything, is worth based living a life on? What, if anything, is worth based living a life on? And as I grew older and I saw the superficialities of what my culture said living life is based on, was that there was no substance to it. Material gain, acquisition, status, ego, aggrandizement, I'm better than you, accumulation. None of that feeds the soul. And so my soul has been hurt by death. And so I'm wondering now what can feed my soul to help me create a life where there's impermanence, where I can go forward and grow my potentials and find joy in being alive, no matter what the challenges are. And so that was the motive energy and the impetus for whatever peoples and cultures I can find that are being real about their feelings and about life and the truth of what's happening in the culture and society that's going on and what has deeper meaning, that draws me to it like a wander in the desert to an oasis for water. So what I discovered about the vision quest, this is a doorway to that deeper kind of exploration and empowerment and insight and understanding of who I am and what I am and what spirit had in mind in giving me this life and what I need to draw on and work on to be able to honor as best I can with my humanness. So it's not about perfection, but with embracing the holiness of our wholeness, I can do to find and walk that heart path to completion. So when the medicine of death does come and kicks me up by the shoulder and said, dude, it's time to go, I can look back, and whenever that might be, I've been living in a way that I can look back and say, okay, I did my best to show up, to live from my heart, my integrity, my authenticity, my soulfulness. And that's all I could do. So I'm not clenching and tight when it's, oh no, I need time to do this or clear that up, or I've been putting it off. No, I've been doing it. I've been living that. I've been listening to my heart, doing the best I can to walk that path of from the heart. So I'm ready to go. I can release peacefully. Mm-hmm. The only way that can happen is if we do take the time to enter into those experiences that open us up to what feeds our souls, what feeds my soul, what feeds our souls. And then the courage to act on the assignments that come from that listening, because the assignments, as I mentioned before, both with plant medicine and Vision Quest, they're not going to be in ego's comfort zone. So if you're not willing to take that on, don't open those doors. But if you are, go through them.
You've done so much in your life, Tom, so much, had so many adventures and been so brave, really, to experience a lot. This is Dare to Dream. Is there anything you have not yet done that you still dream to experience, do, or be?
Well, first of all, let me just go back and correct something you said. When you were talking about the adventures I've had, and I don't know if you use the word adjective, but fearless. So it's a far cry of the truth and reality of me is going on to these adventures was facing fear and anxiety. It wasn't the absence of fear or anxiety. Because of the constrictions that took place with my father's death for those 15 years until the medicine opened up, I was pretty much unconsciously giving all of my power to fear and just acting out of reactivity from the wounds. And the medicine helped me see 15 years later how I had given my power to fear to shut me down and doing those things my heart was calling me to do and being the way my heart was calling me to be. Courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is going forward even when we're scared shitless and our knees are knocking and we're freaking out, but our hearts are saying, you need to do this. So give yourself permission to be freaked out, but don't give the fear power to stop you from doing it. So that was the correction I just wanted to make about my own process. And so now I've forgotten the rest of the part of the question you asked me, so help me out again.
Sure. This is Dare to Dream. So what are you next, Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams or goals? What haven't you done or been yet?
I don't have any like burning things that I want to do or dream for myself personally. The biggest desire in me is to be able to reach, like I said, whenever the end of my life comes, to be able to look back and feel that I've showed up and I did my best to honor the assignments I've been given. So one of the chants that I and prayers that I do when I start my day is, I go where you want me to go. I open to your flow. I do what you want me to do. I surrender to you, Yahoo. So I open to that guidance. I want to be able to feel that I've fulfilled the purpose as best I could that Spirit gave me this life for. And so different ideas come to me for different things about what to do and offer. And so when they come through, I put them out in the world and sometimes they blossom and sometimes they don't. And so part of the work is don't be attached to an outcome. Just show up. My part is a link in a chain, is just to show up and do my part of what Spirit's calling me to do, like the fire ceremonies. When I moved here to Santa Barbara a couple of years ago, the guidance came through with what Guadalupe had told me to do. And I'd done up in where I'd lived in Marin previously for many, many years, but now moving to a new place and didn't know anybody. And after a while, Ruth starting to come down here, it's like the guidance was saying, okay, you need to offer fire ceremonies here, start offering one, even though you hardly know anybody. Spirit brought me together with somebody who had a beautiful place to do that and felt affinity for it, and who came on a vision quest with me 3 weeks after hearing me make a presentation about this kind of a work. So put it out to people he knew. I put it out to a few people I knew, and a few people came. And we had a wonderful experience. And it gradually it grew to where last night there was 25 people there. So for me, it's like one of my prayers is Let me just drop into it for a moment. It's for the healing of the sacred hoop. It's for a critical mass of us two-leggeds of humanity to do the inner work to open our minds and deepen and expand and raise the bandwidth of our awareness to understand and live from the truth of aloha, cosmic love that we are, to live from the truth of aloha, sacred unity, and to do so with allegria, with joy, to kind of create the world we're capable of creating, which is a peaceful and just and beautifully diverse win-win world for all. We're capable of doing that. We are 100% capable of doing that. So my biggest dream, my biggest hope, my biggest a prayer is listening for guidance about what I can do to contribute to that birthing, to the birthing of that dream. That's my biggest dream, and so it makes me have to be responsible for listening every day that I'm given. I don't have no guarantee I'll be given tomorrow, but I'm given this day. So today, Spirit brought you and I together, and so the assignment is to be fully present here and in the truth of who I am, and open to the truth of who you are, and what Spirit brings through us to bring through, and without an attachment to what happens to it, because that's not in you're in my hands, that's in bigger hands, but it's in you and you, it's on you and I to be here present in our integrity and share as we're doing. That's opening a doorway for me, joyful connection with you. Enjoy the dance. Yeah, enjoy the dance of being alive. And so for me, it's joyful and it's blissful to sit in that circle, the 25 people, and hear what came through. They're listening to Tata Wari, the richness of it, and how it was healing and transformational and empowering and inspiring from that experience. And that I get to be a part of supporting people in that waking up process, which moves us toward, this is my hope and prayer, moves us toward achieving that critical mass to shapeshift the paradigm, the destructive paradigm that the world really is living in, based on this perception of separation and ego and capitalism and control and power and getting and materialism, to shape shift, to help us wake up, to remember we are love, our love is forgiving, and we're all connected, and let's get on with cooperating, listening for that guidance from higher than ego to create that kind of world we're capable of creating. That's my biggest prayer, my biggest dream, that can happen. And for whatever time I'm alive here, make damn sure that I show up to do my part to contribute to that birthing.
Mm-hmm. And so your book, folks can get The Psychedelic Shaman. I think also you were just, or maybe right now, or on the Shift Network teaching. Is that correct?
No.
Some of the things that folks can find to work with you.
Yeah, the best thing is go to my website, and there you'll find opportunities about how to connect. Like one free one is every Sunday, my daughter initiated this a couple of years ago, for a half an hour every Sunday from 10 to 10:30 California time. We just tune into Spirit, and she asks me questions, and then I just tune into Spirit and respond to whatever Spirit's bringing through. So that's every Sunday, that's available to people just by.
What's the name of the podcast?
Shamanic Sundays.
Shamanic Sundays.
Yeah.
And so your website is newvisionofliving.org.
Yeah. Or drtompinkson.com. Either one of those. Yeah. And, so that's one opportunity to connect. And there's information there about video course I have, and a Live Love Now group that meets live on Zoom once a month, and once a week I send out written material to it for the exorbitant contribution of $9 a month for that. So there's all kinds of opportunities to connect, and I'm available to people on a one-to-one basis through consulting, mentorship, medicine work, whatever Spirit brings us together to do.
Mm. Thank you for being the medicine. Thank you for bringing the medicine today.
Yeah, you're
really
welcome.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate the time with you and all the work you're doing. All right.
I end today's show with this quote. The wisdom of the ancestors live in the earth, the plants, the stars, and within each of us, as we remember how to listen, as the Huichol do, we awaken to a deeper belonging and a sacred way of being. May we walk forward with reverence, guided by the heart of the vision and the truth of the spirit. Ooh. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, the weekly Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger podcast. And leave a comment and share. Please subscribe. You really help the show. Next week on the podcast, we're talking about an intuitive life with guest Sterling Meyer, who offers personalized tarot readings, intuitive coaching, and extraordinary tools for manifesting your dreams. Thank you for joining us today on the show. And remember everything that Tom said about living in cooperation and love.
Oh. Bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, your number one transformation conversation.